Alright, Squires! Welcome back to another episode of Squirecast. This week we are recording live from the same room that I record in every week, but this week I am joined by three of my lovely co-hosts. I am Matt, of course, your Goblin Guide for this morning. Maybe I should change that at this point. Goblin Guide for this morning. I'll keep it actually genuine, into our second year of podcasting. Finally changing it after, 44 episodes, something like that? I think this is episode 45. And, of course I'm joined this week by three co-hosts. Callum, what's up?
I think we'll ignore for the second that it's 1 PM and mm-hmm. Matt said good morning.
Yep.
But...
this is morning for me, fuck you.
I'm going to say to our lovely listeners, if you weren't listening from the very beginning of Squirecast, tune in, because we're going to be bitching a lot about the weather in the coming months.
Oh yeah. I mean, like, this is... When we were first starting Squirecast, I was recording in an unventilated room at my girlfriend's house, which I regularly had to shut all the windows and doors so that I could get audio sounding anywhere near, like, not shit. And I would quite regularly record in what was, like, probably 40 degrees outside, but was probably, like, 44, 45 degrees inside.
Keeping in mind that's centigrade for all you yes. Fahrenheiters out there.
Someone's like, that's not hot, that's, like... kind of cold. This is Celsius.
For our American listeners, it was 41 degrees in a suburb near where we're recording right now yesterday. Mm-hmm. That is 105 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yep.
So that should give you some idea of how hot it is.
You can calculate that offhand?
No, I actually looked it off last night.
Oh, you piece of shit.
You came prepared.
I was about to say, I am so impressed with you have my children, but you know what?
I actually think about my intros for this show.
I was going to say, bonus points for your foresight. I'm quite impressed.
Well, I was at work yesterday, and as you guys may know, I work in an area that's unair-conditioned, and I work next to a generator, mm-hmm. so it was getting up to 50 degrees Celsius at work, and I was working all day yesterday, and I was thinking, this should be my intro. How fucking hot Australia is all the goddamn time. But yeah, enough for me.
I love the problem that we run into at Good Games June level all the time, which is... occasionally, like, the aircon will just sort of not quite cut it for the amount of people that are in the room, because it is, like, it's not a big room, you know, like, at the store. So, like, occasionally we'll get, like, sort of heat coming off people's voices, and just generally, nerds in general, we tend to generate heat. But we can't open the windows, because we're near Lake Joondalup, so we just have mozzies that would just fly in all the time.
And you die.
So we're basically like, well... gonna have to cut it, to be honest. Just, like, crank the aircon up as high as we can and just sort of roll with it. Mosquitoes. And just, muggy card games.
Mosquitoes great. The size of cats. I don't know what I'd prefer.
I prefer cats the size of mosquitoes, really.
Tiny cats. You can have them on your fingers. Like this.
You can hold 100 cats if they were that small.
I think if you had a good enough balance, you could still hold 100 cats. Just stack them high. I'm sure they do.
Every time you stack two cats on top of one another, that's hard enough.
No, but I have said two cats stacked on top of one
another. I'm fairly certain. I was actually introducing some people just a couple of minutes ago. So, hey, Stephen, what's up?
Hello, I'm Stephen. It's good to be back.
It has been a while since we did a live episode. I forgot sort of how easy it is to get derailed when you're all in the same room as me.
I miss the live episodes. That's good. I'm excited about Commander 2015. As soon as I have money again, I will buy all of them. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
I am also going away for 3 weeks, which is really sad. So I might... this is my last episode for a while.
Yeah. Yay. We'll have a good send-off before you head off to Dongara.
Dongara.
Dongara. Yeah. Which is actually a real place.
Yeah.
Dongara. A real place.
Quite amusingly, in sort of the Western Australia region, there's a town called Dongara, and there's a suburb called Wangara. Now I'm just looking for Dickgara and Penisgara, and then I found all the Gras.
Pretty nice. Yeah. Alright. And joining us this week, our third co-host, or fourth, because I'd be number one.
Are you your own
co-host? Me plus three. I'm co-hosting myself. It's Chris. What's up, man?
I'm feeling a bit weird because I started house-sitting mid this week and all the days have just started to blur into one and I've not been watching TV or had internet, so I've got no idea what's happening.
God. It's Sunday.
Meth is a hell of a drug.
So, yes, that's been me.
Wait, can I update you?
How does you survive...
yes, it's been weird.
But have you been cooking extravagant meals and sitting in the bath for hours at a time, or...?
God, no. The house that I'm sitting in is sort of shit.
Okay, so you couldn't just draw a hot bath, get your laptop and watch season 2 of The Killing on Netflix?
No.
That's what I did. Yeah. You should try it sometime, Chris.
Look, speaking of Netflix, I still haven't watched the last half of No Country for Old Men. And we talked about that like 2 weeks ago.
You would like it.
I always forget that I have Netflix.
It is really good.
Yeah, but I just always forget because I'm doing other shit on the computer.
No, I basically have Netflix on at any point where I could be, where I don't need to be looking at one of my screens so that I can just have it on in the background. I watched this fucking weird, or actually half of a weird documentary last night. William Shatner's The Captains, written and directed by William Shatner. And it's basically just him going around and talking to all of the people who've played Star Trek captains, but with no semblance of, like, a goal or, like, direction at all. He just goes around and talks to them, and he...
Is it just random people on the street who have played the captain, or actual
As in actors? Actual captain. So he, so he talks to, I can never remember the names, but the guy that plays, you know, like, it's Patrick Stewart, and he talks to the guy who plays Ben Sisko in Deep Space Nine, and...
I thought you were only meant
Star Trek
captain.
Name. Yeah, Star Trek captain. Deep Space Nine.
Oh, that's and right. That is a Star
Wait,
Trek
was Worf the captain at one point?
Yes, briefly, I think. I don't know, I can't remember Next Generation all that well. But anyway, he goes through and talks to the girl from Voyager. Yeah, Janeway, and then the guy from Enterprise as well. But it's super weird because William Shatner doesn't know how to interview people. He basically asks them the question, and then the moment they start thinking about it, he goes, "But why?" And just like his, you know, Patrick Stewart's talking about the first time he ever acted, and he's like, you know, so my English teacher, who was really into drama, you know, decided to put me in this play, but why? Well, I guess he probably saw something in me, and, you know, like, but why do you think he did that? And you're like, this isn't an interview. This is just William Shatner interrogating people.
I think he probably felt sorry for Patrick Stewart because he's bald.
But there's a bit where they're just talking about, like, their experiences on Star Trek, and then he's like, so how does it feel to be divorced? And you're like, whoa, okay.
Wow.
Okay.
All right. So I hear your son killed himself last year. How was that?
And there's the bit that I turned it off was when he's talking to Janeway, and he starts talking about how different it must be to be a woman. Oh, God. It gets so cringeworthy, because he's just like, so you must have all these hormones, right, that are making it really difficult for you to, like, raise a family and also be an actress. Like, he's like, it should be impossible, right? And she's looking at him like...
You can't say that.
She's like, yeah, I guess it is, like, it was, you know, it was pretty difficult, but it must be impossible, right, for a woman to do that. Like, it would be impossible for you to be, like, Secretary of State or anything like that. Just doesn't seem possible. And I'm like, why would you leave this in the documentary?
But why?
But why?
How can you support your family earning 20% less than a man?
Oh my God, it's so bad. Like, maybe I'll go back and finish it one day, but I've just got it paused, like, maybe halfway through, because it's just, like, this 5-6 minutes of just William Shatner interrogating her, and it just, oh, it's the worst.
Interrogating about her being a woman.
Also,
So I hear you're a woman. How's that?
final bit on this, before we actually get into anything important, he's interviewing Chris Pine, you know, who plays, you know, Captain Kirk in the movies, the new ones, and the place he chooses to interview him is on a fold-out table directly in front of Paramount Pictures, like, right on the street. So halfway through the interview, basically you can hear people, like, behind them all the time, like, his crew, film crew or whatever, being like, no, no, sorry, we're filming here. Please go away. Yes, I know it's William Shatner and Chris Pine, but please go away. I recognize that we're right in the middle of the fucking street, but please go away. Ah, oh, it's wow. The worst.
Sounds terrible.
And then he changes into an arm wrestle, and it's just, oh, it's glorious in how bad it is.
But so does he beat Captain Janeway in an arm wrestling contest?
Not Janeway. They don't wrestle.
Been a good show to watch?
Hmm?
Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. Now that's a good Netflix series.
Unbreakable. They Alive, damn it.
It's a miracle.
Fuck you, Steven. That's going to be stuck in my head. But, alright.
No worries.
It's going to be stuck in my head while we go into our Weird Card of the Week segment. So
females are strong as hell.
Thank you, Steven.
Wow.
I couldn't help
the myself. Power of auto-tune. Alright, so who wants to start off with their weird card for this week?
I guess I'll do mine first, because it's probably the least weird card.
Alright.
I think it's something I wanted to talk about.
I actually haven't seen your one this week, so this will be surprising.
So my card is a instant dash arcane from Champions of Kamigawa.
Shit.
It costs one blue, it's called Sift Through Sands. Now, Sift Through Sands' first ability is fairly simple.
draw two cards, then discard.
Okay, cool.
Its second ability is what I want to talk about. If you've cast a spell named Peer Through Depths and a spell named Reach Through Mist this turn, you may search your library for a card named The Unspeakable, put it on the battlefield, then shuffle your library.
I'm sorry, yes. What?
Yeah, I forgot about this.
This is a card with a fucking inbuilt combo.
It's a spell that checks whether you've cast two other spells this turn.
Correct, and then it searches for a creature.
A specifically named creature.
Now, what is The Unspeakable
do? The Unspeakable is a 6/7 flying trampler that costs 6 blue-blue, I think.
Yeah, I've seen this guy before. I know he's legendary, and he looks weird as fuck. But yeah, that's super weird.
Because there's that, there's the equipment cycle. That if you have all three of them, you get a dude.
Yeah,
the
so this Caldera. This is like a instant cycle. So, alright, so for reference, The Unspeakable is a 6/7 flying trample, legendary spirit, for 6 blue-blue-blue, so 9 mana. It's a 6/7. And whenever it deals combat damage to a player, you may return target arcane card from your graveyard to your hand.
Yeah, so the thing with this is that Sift Through Sands, as well as Peer Through Depths and Reach Through Mists, are all arcane spells.
Mm-hmm.
The other two are actually quite good.
They all draw cards, right? Like, Peer Through Depths is like an anticipate, but for an instant or sorcery.
Peer Through Depths is, look at the top five, get an instant or sorcery.
And
so Reach Through Mists is just a single blue draw card at instant speed.
And it has splice on... No, it just isn't arcane.
It just isn't arcane.
It's just a good spell to splice onto arcane.
Yeah, so because these are all instants, you can do this at the end of your opponent's turn, or once they've declared an attacker, just like a 6/7 flying trampler.
Yeah, but hang on, how much does this card cost?
One blue-blue.
So to do that all up, it costs 6 mana?
2 blue-blue-blue-blue.
So 6 mana.
Yeah, sure, you can totally do that at the end of your opponent's turn. Just like, wait a minute. Allow me to pay, what, 6 mana? Yeah.
6 mana.
You've obviously never played Control.
Yeah, but like, it's 3 specific spells that I have to cast within the same turn, and to make it happen I have to have 4 blue symbols, so I'm probably in mono blue.
I'm not saying it's not shit, yeah. I'm just saying you've not played Control.
It sounds like you're saying it's not shit, Chris.
I mean, like, honestly, I think Arcane is a pretty... We haven't talked about many Arcane spells on this show. We've talked about plenty of Kamigawa cards, but not Arcane. Arcane is honestly a pretty cool mechanic. It's just so insular in what it does. Because for listeners who have never come across an Arcane spell before, it's basically like a little line of text next to instant. Think of it as like a creature type for that instant. It's just a different kind of spell. And it interacts with a couple of things. So there's a bunch of stuff in the set that interact whenever you play Arcane spells. But it also had this mechanic called Splice onto Arcane, which where you could pay a cost and reveal a Splice onto Arcane card from your hand to add its text to the spell you're casting. Which basically meant that you could cast a spell and keep adding an effect onto it that you never cast. You never cast that additional spell, right? It's just like, you know, for an additional one in a red, every spell that I cast as an Arcane also now says, add red, red, red to your mana pool, right? If you're desperate ritually.
Mm.
It's kind of cool. It's sort of a card advantage mechanic in that you keep cards in your hand, and there's a big theme in that set for having cards in hand, but it's just odd.
Yeah, it's super Kamigawa.
Yeah, it is.
That should be a television show, That's So Kamigawa.
That's So Kamigawa.
Da, na, 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 na.
Yeah.
So yeah, would any of you guys actually play The Unspeakable? Because I play Reach Through Mist in any modern deck, because it's instant speed draw.
And it,
I love that.
Oh, you mean that's the single blue draw
single
card?
Single blue draw card.
Okay, so it's literally just a cantrip.
Yes.
Yeah. No other effect involved, not even anything else, yeah.
I do actually like Reach Through Mist as a card.
Reach Through Mist is also pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, you know, look at the top 5 cards of your library. That's great. You grab the one thing you need. Awesome.
But it has to be an instant or sorcery.
Yeah.
So if you're playing a deck with 25 creatures or something.
Yeah, I mean, you have to have the deck around it, but if you have a mostly instant and sorceries deck, let's say you're, I don't know, for example, Nekazar, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, you go ahead and go grab your Wheel of Fortune.
Something creatureless, yeah.
Yeah, so something with very, very few creatures, it can give you some advantage at a time where, yeah.
It's a specific impulse, but it's still an impulse, right? I mean, honestly, the card you're talking about today, was it 3 mana, instant speed, draw 2, then discard 1?
Yeah, so it's Artifice Epiphany, but more harshly costed, because it's 1 blue.
That's still fine. Like, it's still a divination at instant speed that you then have to ditch a card, which is honestly not always a cost, so.
Yeah.
I think all of the cards are fine on their own. I don't know, I don't necessarily agree with the cantrip one. I don't really think that a cantrip is worth a card.
Really?
No.
I love the ability to play a 48 card deck.
Yeah.
Because I have 4 Quicken, 4 G Probe, 4
The downside is that just set your sinking mana into just a draw with no other G Probe?
Fine. Because it's not, you don't even pay any mana for it.
Yeah.
Quicken, it has another effect attached to it.
Not always.
Not always, but yeah.
Hell, if I go Island Go, and then at the end of my opponent's turn, just go Quicken. I wasn't going to use that mana for anything else.
Yeah,
screw that. Replace it with another card.
You just turn in something else. Yeah. Right. Well, fair enough. I think all of these cards are fine on their own. Honestly, I think the Unspeakable is also pretty cool. I think if you play a mono blue arcane deck, he's a pretty cool commander actually, because he is legendary. And it's 9 mana for a 6/7 trampler.
But does it not have to be from your library?
Well, yeah. If you want to make this combo happen, sure. But I mean, I think the Unspeakable is honestly a pretty good card too.
Yeah, so the idea is you use Commander Beacon to put it back into your hand, then Mind Moil it back into your deck,
yes.
Then cast these three spells.
I think we're done here.
Alright, who's next?
Alright, I'll tackle my one next. I'm pretty sure I only ever go first or last in these things, so I may as well go second. Alright, so card I'm talking about today is, it's called Signal the Clans, and it's from Gatecrash. So, this is a card from one of my first sets that I ever picked up and actually started opening. So, for green and a red, it's an instant. This is a Gruul spell. And it's search your library for 3 creature cards and reveal them. If you reveal 3 cards with different names, choose one of them at random and put that card into your hand. Shuffle the rest into your library. So, now green and red don't tend to get tutors like this very often. Especially not for something for 2 mana at instant speed. That's kind of unprecedented. The thing here is, you're not necessarily getting exactly what you want, because you're gonna get one of 3 choices, and they do have to have different names. So you can't just go, I'm gonna go looking for 3 copies of this card that I want, and I'm gonna get one of them at random. Oh ho ho! You have to go looking for 3 different things, and in Commander, I think this is a pretty sweet shooter. This is a very solid shooter, because you might have multiple creatures that fulfill the same role. You're like, you know what I need right now? A beefy mid-sized dude that has another ability. So I'm gonna go looking for, you know, this and this and this. Sweet. I can get either one of them, that's fine, you know.
Either one of these 3.
Either one of these 3, yeah.
It's good, because you have so much tech in your commander deck, you'll invariably find something that'll help you at least, mm-hmm. So.
It's like, I need a Yokel Hops, or an Obliterate, or a Decree of Annihilation.
Only goes looking for creatures.
Oh, only goes looking for creatures? Yeah. That's bullshit!
But I've seen Robbie use that to terrifying effect in his Hydra deck, where he'll go, okay, look, I want Phyrexian Hydra, or Colonial Hydra, or Primordial Hydra. And no matter which one he gets, it's always still a lot of trouble.
It's always a good choice. Yeah, or like, even if like, you're like, you know what I really need right now is another Mana Dork. I'm gonna go looking for Llanowar Elf, Elvish Mystic, and Findhorn Elves. They're functionally the exact same creature, you know?
Wait, is Rothalos banned as part of the 99?
I believe so. Rafelos, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Wait, like the chocolate?
No, Rafelos.
No, you're thinking of Raphael.
Raphael.
The elf that produces ridiculous amounts of mana.
I see.
Yeah.
He's not... It's a green creature?
Yeah.
Not a white.
He's a 2-1 for green.
Not coconut.
No coconut. No.
He's basically a mid-flavored Oreo.
Yeah.
So Rafelos.
I mean, I don't know if this is necessarily a good card, but it is a pretty functional card in what it can do. In 60-card Magic, this tends to get, I think, worse, because you're probably not going to have as many options to go looking for, probably not as many, like, functional redundancies. But I really like this in Commander. It's super cheap, it's instant speed, and it goes looking for stuff in a way that I feel is actually pretty fair. Like, even if your playgroup doesn't really like tutors, I don't know if this necessarily counts, because you're getting something kind of at random.
Yeah.
With a margin of, I chose what these things are. Weird thing I find about it as well is that you can search your library for 3 creatures, but if they have the same name, then you just don't resolve the rest of the spell.
Wait, is it the Gifts Ungiven text up to 3 creatures, or does it have to be 3 creatures?
It's search your library for 3 creatures.
So you can just say, I only have 1 creature in my library, here it is.
No, you have to go looking for 3.
But what if you only have 1?
I don't know, actually.
What I'm saying, is it the Gifts Ungiven thing? It says look for 4, but if you bullshit and say there's only one card in my library.
Gifts Ungiven says up to 4.
No, the original one didn't.
Oh, the original
one. My copy of Gifts Ungiven says 4.
So can you
straight up?
So can you fail to find it? No.
With gifts? Yeah, just put 2 things in your
grave. No, I know with gifts. Like, that's how it's done.
Yeah.
But
but yeah, I don't know. I don't know necessarily what would happen with this card. I feel like maybe you just wouldn't have enough targets for it, and you would just like, I don't know, maybe it just wouldn't work. But I enjoy the fact that you can go look, search your library for up to three creature cards and reveal them, and then if you reveal three cards with different names, then you get to do the rest of the spell. If not, then you just shuffle them back into your library. You're like, hey look, it's the same card. Back in.
Plus one storm count. Yes.
No. It's green, red, shuffle your library.
No, your opponent's playing Kossi's Trickster and Word of commands you to force you to do this.
Yeah.
And then chooses three cut creatures with the same name, so Kossi's Trickster gets the counter because you shuffled your library.
Yeah. So you're playing, your opponent's in blue-black, and they force you to cast green-red to shuffle your library.
Exactly.
Nice. Cool. Alright, so that's Signal the Clans. Who wants to go next?
I'll go next.
Alright.
Good luck, Chris.
Super Chris.
Yes. Good luck pronouncing this card.
Yes. Yeah. You can hold my shoe.
I've got mine now.
Oh, okay. No worries, I'll put my shoe back on.
My card is Eyes of the Wisenet Spore. Wisenet Spore. Wisent. However you want to pronounce that.
None of those are net.
I think it's Wisent. Wisent. Wisent.
Whatever.
Yeah, it's Wisent.
Pronounce
it however you like.
Pomegranate.
It costs one colorless, one green. It is a tribal enchantment. Elemental.
Tribal enchantment. That's pretty funny.
And it reads, whenever an opponent plays a blue spell during your turn, you may get a 4/4 green elemental creature token into play.
So this is a hate card, yes. Right? It's like, okay, are you playing blue? Are you countering my spells? Are you doing various other things during my turn at instant speed? Then fuck you. I get big dudes. And they're big dudes. They're 4/4s. Mm. Like, that's pretty sizable for something that you paid one and a green for.
Are you trying to get out the unspeakable during my turn?
Yeah.
Fuck you.
I'm gonna get 12 power.
I'd love to see that used in a 60 card environment where you have four copies out and your opponent's like, Impulse? Yeah, right, sure, but I'll get 4/4s.
Yeah.
No, you do the old quicken verdict, so then they've got, like, 16 creatures and then it will just die anyway.
So, I mean, like, this is a pretty awesome sideboard card if you're playing it in 60 card stuff, right? You're like, you know what I really need against control? Like, a very counterspell heavy control? It's just that it's something that they can't kill, right? Unless they side in enchantment removal. And if I'm like a, you know, green heavy creature deck, or a creature heavy green deck, as I was meant to say, you side this in and your opponent's like, oh shit, that's something I can't really deal with. And then whenever they do stuff during your turn, probably countering your spells, you get dudes. It's sick. But it only does that. Like, this is basically the prototypical do nothing enchantment if your opponent isn't playing blue. So
I'm gonna correct you there, Matthew.
Unless you tweak it.
This goes well in the Bant Isochron Scepter deck, because, hear me out, you're playing Swell the Mists.
Okay.
So this card is now whatever colour they're playing. You've got Isochron Scepter with Silence imprinted on it, and you silence every single one of their turns, so they have to cost shit during your turn. Then you just get an infinite amount of dudes.
But what if
it's the perfect system?
But what if they're playing mono creatures and none of them have flash?
Shut up, that's why.
Well,
then you've won already because you're silencing all their turns.
Yeah. See, if you run four copies of this in a deck with the only other creature being Nylea, you can get your devotion up.
I don't know. I mean, like,
it's devotion cap plus one. It's alright.
It is also relevant that it's an elemental spell. It is, so that's kind of cool. So you can get it back with a Horde of Notions, I think. That lets you return an elemental card to the battlefield. There's a couple other things that trigger off elemental cards, because this is, you know, it's from Lauren Block, so it's a tribal. So
it makes Tarmogoyf a bit bigger?
It makes Tarmogoyf a bit bigger. It actually makes Tarmogoyf 2 bigger, because it's an enchantment and a tribal card. Oh, shit.
Is Tarmogoyf an elemental?
No.
Lahurgoyf.
He's Lahurgoyf. Right. Yeah. But it is the you know, I really wish modern, quick aside, people who play Tarmogoyfs in modern, I really wish people would play Tarfire if they're playing Tarmogoyfs, just so that they can get that extra, like, tribal thing going. Cause you see that occasionally in Legacy, is people who just, like, they splash for Tarfire, which is, it's a shock that happens to be a tribal sorcery goblin. So it's like, why don't you just play it? It's not a bad card, and hey, it makes your Tarmogoyf bigger.
Well, I mean, sorcery speed shock isn't particularly good.
It's an instant, isn't it?
You said tribal sorcery. That's why I was confused.
Oh, it's a tribal sorcery. Okay. Yeah, well, apparently I outsmarted myself.
But would you not do it anyway to make your Tarmogoyf bigger?
I don't know. If you're in the Tarmogoyf off.
Tarmogoyf off.
Tarmogoyf off. Maybe you bring it in.
Alright.
But in the Tarmogoyf counts all graveyards.
Yeah.
So the Tarmogoyf off would be even anyway.
Oh my god,
they'd both be
yeah.
eight nines.
Yeah. Damn it. Well,
Oh, never mind. It's anyway. A stupid joke about, like, playing 9-9 holes of Goyf, golf. Because nine.
Alright, well, Stephen, it's probably just best we move along.
Alright,
what's your weird card?
Here's my card. It is from Ice Age. It is a sorcery that costs 2 black-black, and it is called The Stench of Evil. And the art is wonderful, but we'll get to that. So the effect reads, destroy all planes.
What?
For each land destroyed this way, Stench of Evil deals 1 damage to that land's controller unless he or she pays 2 colorless. So there's a Ristic damage effect as well.
That's sick.
So if you play this against a mono-white player, you fuck them over, because you've destroyed all their lands, and they can't pay the mana to stop the damage.
Yeah, because you blew up all their lands.
Yeah. But against anyone else who's even entertaining the idea of having planes, they could stop the damage if they like.
And this costs 4, right?
It costs 4. So it's 4 mana, all planes gone.
So, I mean, yeah, for the second time this week, we have a very good at what it does, but very specific hate card. Right? Yeah,
the difference is planes isn't a color word.
Yeah, it's true.
So you can't use Balduvian Shaman to change the text. Because that only affects white enchantments.
But can you not land... Are there not effects that hack land types?
Yeah, actually, yeah. Some of the I don't know what you'd call that effect, but, we're talking about this card, the shitty blue sorcery from Gatecrash.
Trait Doctoring.
Trait Doctoring, that's the one.
And you say we don't bring it up very often.
That's the one. Trait Doctoring, I'm fairly certain, says color or basic land type. So...
Does that mean Trait Doctoring is usable?
Trait Doctoring's always been usable.
It's not usable!
Just don't cipher it onto a defender.
Yeah. So Trait Doctoring changes the text of target permanent. It only changes permanents.
Fisting. All right.
Yeah.
But there must be an effect somewhere. Like, that weird...
I don't know. I feel like you're stretching it. Like, this is an amazing card against mono-white.
It's an okay card. Yeah.
Honestly, I feel like against mono-white, this is pretty damn good. Like, it's a one-sided Armageddon that then hits them for how much damage? 2 damage?
One each.
Yeah, but you'd assume... I'm thinking this in Commander because it's Ice Age. So you'd assume they'd have stuff like Iganjo Castle or Windbrisk cards.
Yeah, other non-basic lands.
Yeah, non-basic lands that produce white. Caracas isn't a plains. And we all have one of those.
But if they've got that Shadow Maw Plains, you won't be putting things on the bottom of your library now, will you, bitch?
Or Misfell Plains. What's the other one? The one that searches for a plains when it dies.
Oh, God. Flagstones of Trocaire?
Flagstones of Trocaire. Is that a plains on its own?
No, it's just a legendary land. I think it's actually legendary.
Legendary.
Yeah, it's legendary. Because you put a second one down that kills itself.
In the second or third episode of Squirecast, I'm pretty sure I said I would insist on pronouncing legendary as legendary.
Yep.
And that never happened.
Nope.
Chris is the only one who ever remembers to pronounce things wrong.
So yeah, legendary.
I would like to say that I flub very, very often. So I don't necessarily say things wrong, I just don't say the word, really.
Although that brings up something I was reading the other day. I was wiki-walking and I got to etiquette in Australia and New Zealand.
Wiki-walking, I've never heard that term before.
It's when you're on like Wikipedia or something, you just keep clicking links and putting them up in new tabs.
That makes sense, actually, yeah.
Yeah, and they're saying that Australians and New Zealanders speak a lot quicker than other English-speaking nations. And quite often we just drop parts of words or even whole words because we assume people are following.
Yes. You guys are really bad at that.
which made me think that if I spoke in this podcast the way I actually speak, no one would understand what the hell I'm talking about most of the time.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm like such oblique references to shit that no one's ever heard of.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to try it for the remainder of this episode?
I'd rather you didn't. For the purposes of our listeners understanding, you know, the flow of our speech. Yeah, I feel like I would probably fall prone to that as well. Because I find that when I'm typing, to be honest. I skip over just, like, little basic words and sentences. And when I'm reading through the sentence, it makes perfect sense to me. Because, like, I didn't need to put these words in this word and this word and this word. I'm an English major. Like, at uni, I was an English major. So that was somewhat of a problem. Because it basically meant I had to reread everything I wrote. But, you know. That's how it rolls. Alright, so.
The Stench of Evil.
Stench of Evil. I like it if you're playing mono white. If you're against someone playing mono white.
I wish there was a white Urborg.
Yeah.
Werborg.
Destroy all planes, bitch.
Wait, but Urborg starts with a U. That should be Blueborg. Oh.
My god.
What? I guess it would...
Wait, wouldn't it be blue-red?
You're blue-red.
My face is blue-red. I'm sorry.
Alright, guys. Weird card of the week. that was pretty good. I don't know, like, I've never heard of the combo card you talked about, Callum. That was pretty sick. I don't know. I've seen Signal of the Clans played a lot. I have like a fuck ton of these Signal of the Clans. This is just a junk rare I opened all the time. And
is that a junker rare than Trait Doctoring?
Yes.
No.
Trait Doctoring is crap. The junk rare. This is just like a.
But Trait Doctoring has Cypher. You get to use it more than once, maybe.
A quick aside, what is the junkest rare you've opened in your Magic career? Like, what is the junk rare that you've opened the most in your...
As in the junk rare that I have opened the most, or yeah. Just the junkest rare I've opened?
For example, no, that you've opened the most. Because let me tell you, if I buy another booster pack and get another spawn of Thraxes, I swear I'm going to shit my pants. I've got, like, 15 of the fuckers, and I have no use for them.
Mine is probably... Let's see.
Dagatar second.
I opened a shit ton of hundred-handed one in Theros.
Hell yeah.
He blocks
99 additional creatures.
Like, he's a pretty good card. I really enjoyed playing with him, but I probably opened close to 100 hundred-handed ones. It's probably stretching it, but I don't know. In BFZ, I've been opening a lot of Serpentine Spike, which I fucking hate. Oh my god, Serpentine Spike, so shit. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's probably the junkest that I've got. Ooh, I opened a bunch of aggressive mining in 15. Yeah.
Although my very first pull from my very first pack of origins was a foil aggressive mining, and I'm like, yep, that goes in
you
the
mean,
folder.
You mean M15?
M15,
yeah.
Sorry. Just aggressive mining, fantastic.
Mm.
What about you guys?
I don't remember what I opened.
Okay.
My go-to was Zergo Helm Smasher, because I've opened two of him, and I'll never play him in any
deck.
I'll take him off your hands.
Fuck you.
I'll give him a good hope.
I'd rather they die.
Okay. Wow. Alright.
Fighting words.
Not him die, Zergo.
Yeah, it would be a bit weird if I'm sitting in the same room, and you're like, I'd rather they die. just pointing to me.
No, I'm pointing to the building.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry about that aside. But
about the Netflix aside as well.
New Bond film was good.
I haven't seen it yet. I'm gonna go see it with my dad on Tuesday. So
no spoilers. It's good.
I'm a big Bond fan. I always have been.
That's what I've heard. If it's shit for a Bond movie, it's more of an action movie than a Bond movie.
No, look. I disagree. Keep in mind that the Daniel Craig films have had a very different style to the Bond films of old, and this new film Spectre is actually a bit of a throwback to the classic Bond films. Mm. And I liked it. I thought it was okay.
Mm-hmm.
Was it better than the Timothy Dalton Bond?
I honestly really like Timothy Dalton
Bond. So do I. Right. He's like second behind George Lazenby for me.
Okay, now hold on, because Pierce Brosnan is a sexy beast.
No, Pierce Brosnan was good in GoldenEye and nothing else. George Lazenby was good in every single film he was in.
The one film he was in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Batting
yeah.
a thousand.
Yeah. I don't know, like, was it, Timothy Dalton was in two Bond films? Living Daylights and...
Moonraker, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't Moonraker. That was Roger Moore.
Oh shit! Yeah.
Yeah, because that was a goofy movie. So
the goofy movie was
fuck off. Fuck off! I knew where you were going with that.
I didn't rewatch the goofy movie. I remember that being funny.
All right. All right, gentlemen. We have a main topic for this week, and this week we are talking about something that I want to talk about for a long time, which is quadrant theory. Now, for those listeners who have just gone like, wait. The fuck is he going to try and talk about? This is some physics bullshit. What are you trying to teach me here? This is quadrant theory. This is a magic, I don't know, card evaluation tool, really, that was drawn up by the guys over at Limited Resources, another podcast who are very focused on limited, and spiky players like myself and, you know, finding ways to become better at the game and to bring all of your skills up to the best thing that they can be. And basically this is a 4-point sort of system where you can look at a card and evaluate what you'll need in each of those quadrants of the game, because they're quadrants, of course there's going to be four of them. Thank you, Stephen.
I knew you were going to say that as well. I'm just sitting here thinking, please don't say there are four quadrants. It's assumed.
And basically you're going to evaluate where they fit into each of those quadrants and sort of use that as a way to figure out whether it's a good card or not. So I'm basically going to be talking about this theory. This is something I've used before to you guys, and I wanted to see what you thought about it. And give me your thoughts on the idea of using a formula to try and figure out whether cards are good or not. Or in this case, whether they're good enough to put in your limited deck. You know, if you've never played a limited format before, or this also extends to constructed, but it's mostly for limited where you're trying to evaluate cards on the fly. If you've never played this particular format before and you're looking at this card, it's a way to look at it and go, okay, is this something I want to put in my deck? How do I think this is going to perform? And then figure it out from there. So, alright, so let's get into what the quadrants actually are. So basically these are going to be four different stages of the game. Number one, developing. So the first stage is developing. This is where both players are basically playing out all the cards in their hand to develop their board state. It's where you're trying to figure out, okay, which one of us is the aggressor, which one of us is the control player. You're trying to you're starting your game. You're trying to figure out what's going on. Cards that are really good at this stage of the game are things that get you ahead. You know, maybe cheap draw spells that get you into more stuff. Creatures that have a really good impact straight on the game. Even just cheap creatures, right, that come down early and start doing stuff straight away. This is often one of the best ways. This is like one of the more important parts of the game to be really good at, because you really want a card that, if I'm starting to play the game, I want to put it down, I want to come ahead nice and quickly, and I want to stay ahead, if that's at all possible. Next part of the game is parity. So this is another part of the game that you may or may not reach, which is where, basically, both players have played out all of the cards in their hand. You've got a point where you're both top decking, and maybe the board state is just sort of clogged, you know, nothing is really happening right now, I can't attack, you can't attack, you know, you've got, you know, good blockers, that kind of things. Maybe if one of us makes a slip, the other one is just gonna win. And you're basically both relying on the top card of your deck. So cards that are good right now are cards that are really good at breaking stalemates. Something like a board wipe, or just a massive flyer, or something else that is gonna help you turn the tide of the game in your advantage. Even something minor like an anthem effect, right, might be enough to make your team bigger than their team and start pushing the game in your advantage. Or a planeswalker, where maybe they can't attack it or do anything against it, but you can just keep generating advantage while you're at this parity. Stuff like that. The third quadrant is when you're winning. It's pretty self-explanatory. You're in a stage of the game where the game is going your way. Your opponent is struggling to keep up with what you're doing. You've got big creatures attacking in the air. You've got them completely controlled. You've got a bunch of planeswalkers going on. You know, you're keeping them down and you're winning. Basically, cards that are good right now at this point in the game is any spell. It's any spell that is going to keep you ahead and keep you going ahead. All you're doing is putting down a bear every turn. You're still going to keep winning because you're winning, right? It's pretty rare for a card to be bad when you're winning, but they do exist. So it's something to evaluate, right? Generally speaking, if a card is only good when you're winning, it's probably not a card you want to put in your deck, because if it's only good when you're already ahead, you know, it's a niche card. And the final quadrant is when you're losing. So see the explanation I gave for winning, but put yourself on the opposite side of that idea, right? You are getting beaten down in the air by a massive demon, and your opponent has a bunch of planeswalkers, and they're just keeping you under your boot. This is the second most important part of the game to be, for a card to be really good at. It's a card that can take you from one life, you know, and being beaten down by massive flyers to, okay, this game could possibly go my way. Something like a Wrath of God, or even something like a Sphinx's Revelation for a bunch. You know, you're going to draw a bunch of cards and gain a bunch of life. That's something that could bring you back from losing to not losing. So those are the four main quadrants. And basically, I'm going to use a couple of examples to show you how you can put a card into these quadrants and figure out what it does. So the classic example for something like this is Active Treason, right? Two in a red, sorcery, gain control of target creature and opponent controls, untap it, it gains haste, you give it back at the end of the turn. Alright, so, first quadrant, developing. This card is really not that good in the developing stage. Stealing one of your opponent's creatures and punching them and then giving it back doesn't do anything to develop your board state. It punches them for a bit, and it helps get you ahead in probably life total, but probably doesn't do a whole bunch. After you've played that spell, the impact on the board is very minimal. So then parity. This card is also not that great at parity. If your opponent has a bunch of, it might be the thing that breaks the stalemate if you take one of their good blockers and then punch through, but most likely if they, you're at parity because there's a bunch of things in the way, and stealing one of their guys is probably not going to make that much of a difference. And unless you're killing them immediately with that act of treason, probably not going to make that much of a difference if at the end of the turn you have to give it back.
Well, I think it just depends on what creature you're taking. Like, yeah. Imagine the situation where you're taking an Elish Norn.
Yeah, exactly. And
keeping then, in mind, then it's a four toughness swing.
Yeah.
But with the quadrant theory, though, you have to evaluate the cards in a vacuum, because it's all well and good to say, you know, well, if I act of treason and then sacrifice that creature to Phyrexian Altar, then, yeah. You know, then, oh, it can... You know, board state. We can board state.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but you have to look at the card just as is.
How can you do that with active treason, where you have to look at what it's taking, because it specifically takes a creature.
Right.
You can't say it's bad some of the time, because some of the time it's also going to be amazing.
Yeah, and exactly.
That's going to even out quite a bit.
That's one of the things with the coordinate theory, is that it's hardly a blanket formula for figuring out whether something is always good or always bad. You always have to take into account the thing. But what you're going to be doing with this is just thinking of like an average case scenario, right? So like, you imagine a board state where you and your opponent each have like two
bears.
You also each have a 0/4 defender and a 3/3 flyer.
Tiger. Oh, sorry.
Whatever. If I steal their flyer for the turn, I can then bash them in the air for 6. Cool. But then they get the flyer back at the end of the turn, and if that 6 damage didn't kill them, it really hasn't done anything, right? That's the average case scenario for an average sort of limited game. That's just sort of maybe how the game has gone. Alright, then when you're winning, here's where active treason basically shines, right? When you're winning, and all you need to do is make sure your opponent doesn't come back from losing, active treason does that fantastically. If your opponent, all they've done is just they're trying to come back from losing and they slam down a creature, you just steal that creature and punch them with it, that probably just closed out the game. And that meant that you probably went from probably winning to definitely winning, which is basically where this card is actually at its best. Of course, Act of Treason as a specific card works also really well if your deck is designed to have sac outlets and all that good stuff, which, if your deck is designed to do that, at this point in the game when you're winning, you probably have that stuff online. Your deck is doing what you want it to do, so the card that you're playing now lets you do that. And when you're losing, this is probably the point where Act of Treason is the worst. If you are losing and being beaten down by some big things, Act of Treason is probably not going to save you, because if all you need to do is stabilize, and you're going to do something that is going to go away at the end of the turn, it's really not what you want.
Because it's not an instant.
It's not an instant, sure. But, like, it's a one-time effect, right? I'm going to... Oh, no, you're bashing me with your Lord of the Pit, and I'm on, you know, 7 life. I'm going to steal it for the turn and hit you. Yes, you took 7. Again, if you didn't kill them with that swing, your entire turn was irrelevant. You'll give the Lord of Pit back. It then just hits you and kills. You didn't kill it. You didn't do anything with it. You just took it for a bit and then gave it back. So that's an example of like evaluating a card on the coordinate theory. And Active Treason scored pretty shittily. It got a no in developing. It got a maybe in parity. It got a yes in winning, and it got a definite no in losing, which is not great. But then on the flip side of that, take something like Vampire Nighthawk. Vampire Nighthawk excels in every single one of the quadrants. It is one of the best things you would ever want to land at the start of the game. You know, a 2/3 flying Death Touch lifelink. It attacks well, it blocks well, it does everything you want. If you're at parity, a flyer is basically exactly what you want, and it's got lifelink, so it's probably going to keep putting you ahead on life. It's also got Death Touch, so it makes your opponent very hard for them to deal with. If you're winning, this is something that's very hard for your opponent to kill. It has a bunch of stuff going on. It's fantastic. I mean, basically any spell is great when you're winning, but Vampire Nighthawk is a fantastic one. And if you're losing, a 2/3 flying Death Touch lifelink, it's probably going to be able to deal with almost anything that your opponent's doing. Big Dragon got you down? Sure. Vampire Nighthawk's there to help. All you need is just a good blocker on the ground that also gains you a bunch of life. Vampire Nighthawk is there to help. If you need to start chipping away their Planeswalker so they don't ultimate in a couple of turns, a flyer does a fantastic job with that.
And also life.
Yeah, it's like, it's gaining you a bunch of stuff. Vampire Nighthawk gets, like, a resounding yes across all 4 of the quadrants.
I wonder if we can find a card that scores a no across all the quadrants then.
Trait doctoring.
One with nothing.
One with nothing, actually, absolutely.
Yeah.
One with nothing where you just discard your entire hand. That's shit when you're winning. Like,
you know, it's shit when you're developing.
Yeah.
It's like, swamp, discard my hand, go.
Yeah.
I am hellbent, turn 2.
It's shit when you're trying to get off the board. it's shit when you're at parity, because you top deck a one with nothing and go, cool, black. I just discard the card that I just played. It's shit when you're winning, because when you're winning, you want to be playing stuff that does things, not does bad things to you. And when you're losing, of course, it's horrible.
There was also one I immediately thought of when you said most spells are good when you're winning, and I thought of Apocalypse.
Because
Apocalypse for 2 red, 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 exile all permanents, you discard your hand.
I'm winning, but I don't feel like it. Apocalypse.
So, yeah, I mean, like, generally, Wrath Effects and Board Wipes are... I mean, obviously, no one's going to say that Wrath of God is a bad card, but Wrath of God
is a bad card.
Does score very badly on the winning front, right? And it also scores pretty badly on the developing front, because that's not really what you want to be doing when you're trying to develop your board state, unless you're a control deck, right? Because, I mean, of course, one of these things as well is, this is a theory that's designed with limited in mind, so it's taking into account you're probably playing vanilla creatures, and your deck is tuned but not thought out beforehand, like you made it up as it was happening. You might have a couple of rares, but you probably don't have that many, you know, crazy bombs going on. So something like a Wrath, is not something you can always take into account, or something like a control deck is not something you can always completely take into account as something you're doing. Creatures are of course very important in a limited format. So Wrath of God, it's like bad at developing, good at parity, bad when you're winning, really good when you're losing. So it's odd that you can get a card, you're like, oh, but it only gets like, you know, 1.5 yeses in the 4 quadrants. Yeah, but it's still a really good card, because in those quadrants, it's amazing.
See, I would say it's good when you're winning as well, because you still had all Ds. You didn't even need to use it.
Yeah, attack you.
You did anyway.
Attack you for a bunch, Wrath of God, play some more creatures down. Yeah. You know, I used to do that all the time on the Duels of the Planeswalkers with the Eldrazi deck, which was the attack for lethal, get like 9 Annihilator triggers, make them sack all their permanents, I get them all, then I fog, and I just pass the turn. So, like, I attack you for 57, and I get all of your permanents, and, no, you don't die this turn. Top deck,
what
bitch.
A dick move.
just so I can do it again.
Now, also, fog, as another matter, because you know what? Fog is universally reviled, because, almost universally reviled, because
in limited, yeah.
Anything good.
Right.
So,
is fog better than darkness?
I don't actually know the
difference. They're functionally identical. Darkness is just the black one.
That costs more.
It costs black.
It costs black.
Oh.
Is fog better than Holy Day, which is the white version?
Which is functionally identical and just costs all white.
Is there one for each color?
No.
There's those three.
It's just like they printed fog, and then they printed darkness, I guess, because they liked the idea of darkness making it hard for people to fight. Then over time, they decided that fog should probably be in white. And then over time, they decided that was a bad idea. So, there are no red fogs and no blue fogs, although that would be really dumb.
There's a blue creature with fog.
Is that?
Fog bank.
Oh, yeah. That's not all. It's like blue gets fogs in like a collected form. Yeah.
I'd like to see an unconditional Wrath called Breathing Room. I don't know why, it just seems like a great thing to call a Wrath. You gain 5 life as well.
I feel like Breathing Room would, it's like, pick one of your creatures and blow up the rest. So the guy's like, it's getting too crowded in here, I don't like it!
So basically...
It's just me.
Dune Blast?
It's basically Dune Blast, yeah.
So from now on, we have to call Dune Blast Breathing Room.
Breathing Room, yeah, that's the one. But yeah, so Fog, bad when you're developing, because...
What?
It's a tempo play, sure, but it doesn't really do anything to develop your board state.
It prevents damage.
Yeah, but it doesn't do anything to develop your board state.
It keeps you alive one turn longer.
Keeping in mind, development does not mean stopping undevelopment.
Yeah.
Like, because that's what fog is doing. You've developed a board state, someone's gonna fuck on your creatures, you're like, you're not gonna fuck on my creatures? That's not development, that's stopping undevelopment. Yeah.
Sort of on a tangent to that, things like Doomblade, or Bounce Effects, or Lightning Bolts, or whatever, removal spells, are actually pretty damn good when you're developing. Because shutting your opponent off from, like, if I put down a creature, they put down a creature, I kill their creature, that's great. My board state is now better than theirs.
But fog does not do that.
But fog does not do that. Because it doesn't actually change the board state. But fog is mediocre when you're at parity. Because if your opponent tries to break the parity, fog might just fuck them and then you kill them on the crackback. Because they were like, oh cool, I've got lethal here. swing. No, you don't. Now I kill you. That has happened to me many times in limited formats. Most recently at the Battle for Zendikar pre-release. I swung with an Ulamog! And how did I lose that game?
A Nulamog or an Ulamog?
Nulamog, yeah. Nulamog. I swung with a Nulamog and exiled his library down to 2 cards. And then he fogged, and then he killed me on the crackback.
That is pissy shit.
That's pimp value right there. Like, that's a sweet play by that guy. Not great for me, though, because I was like...
Should have seen it coming.
I was like, Nulamog.
Would you say that was really good while he was losing, though?
Well...
It was a fog effect, and he was losing.
Well, yeah, but that exact example was, we were at parity. I then played an Ulamog. I then broke the parity and swung, and then he went, oh, no, and then killed me.
Alright.
Fog is also really bad when you're winning, of course, if you want to be attacking for lethal or whatever. Although, if you are a control deck or a combo deck or something like that where you're trying to get a combo off, trying to win with that, fog might be just the tool you need to make sure that you do still win. So, there are circumstances where fog is good.
See, in my opinion, if you're playing a combo deck or looking for specific pieces for something, fog is basically a time walk. You get an extra draw spell, you get an extra draw for your turn because you've not taken any damage, and you're getting an extra land. And sometimes that's all you need.
Well, yeah, you might just make your opponent's turn irrelevant.
Yeah.
Which is good. And yeah, that's what I mean.
Which is why fog is good in every situation.
Fuck off.
Because it's a time walk.
Irrelevant. I caught that.
Damn it.
But yeah, so this is quadrant theory. One of the things, of course, with quadrant theory is that no card is really, immune to it. It's something that's also pretty good to look at in multiplayer focused games like Commander. And I wanted to take, one of my own favorite commanders, Zergo Helm Smasher, as an example of a card that, I wanted to see how it fares on the quadrant theory. And it's honestly not that great, because, Zergo is a 7/2 for 5 with haste, has to attack every turn if able, he has indestructible during my turn, and whenever he kills a creature by combat, he's gonna get a +1/+1 counter. So he is pretty good when you're developing. Not great, but pretty good. He's a big dude, comes down, starts swinging, he's probably gonna put you into a winning position very quickly, he's very easy to kill as soon as you pass the turn, unless you have ways to protect him. You know, he has to attack every turn available, so if you're trying to develop some kind of defense, pretty shitty at that. Probably in the wrong kind of deck for that kind of thing. It's probably best not to touch that. It's a UV light for heating up your nail polish so that it dries quickly.
Yeah, but Chris is already dry, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Sensational!
Sensational.
I see, because it's sensational and for your nails. Yes.
It's honestly pretty cool. Like, Tyler just, like, she puts the gel stuff on and goes, boop. It's just like instantly dry, like it's been there for a couple of hours.
I would honestly be terrified to use a black light anywhere in this house. I'm sure there is semen all over it.
Well, not all of it. There are 2 girls that live.
Lady
all,
semen.
All over it. So yeah, so Zergo, not that great when you're trying to develop. At parity, he's also sometimes good, sometimes not. If sometimes all you need is just a massive creature to swing through the army that your opponent has and they can't block it very profitably because if they do, he's gonna kill them and get big +1/+1 counters and stuff, there's that. But if you're at parity where if you swing with one dude and then your opponent's gonna crack back and kill you, he's not that great either.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking is, at parity, you really don't wanna be swinging every turn.
No, sometimes you wanna be like, alright, here's a big thing. Let's see how this goes. Alright, now I'll decide to attack. Zergo is like... you can choose to play Zergo, of course, in main phase 2.
Yeah, that fool.
Yeah, sure, that's great. That's fine.
Because then he's just a 7 power blocker. If that's the very worst he is.
Yeah, but... Yeah, that is basically Zergo in, like, worst case scenario. When you're winning, Zergo's amazing! When you're like, I just want to finish up this game really quickly, top deck, bam, that's an extra 7 damage.
Fog.
Zergo is phenomenal in that situation, except unless he gets fogged or Swords of Plowshare or whatever. And when you're losing, Zergo is honestly pretty shit. You do not want to be swinging when you're losing, generally. If your opponent's beating you down with a massive demon, which is for some reason my go-to, I'm losing, is there's a Lord of the Pit attacking me. You know, Zergo, you're like, well, this isn't all that great. You know, Zergo doesn't block all that well. Like, he trades up pretty good, but he's only got 2 toughness, so he's gonna die in the exchange. He's not gonna block profitably.
Yeah, he blocks like a bitch.
Yeah.
He dies to a 2-1.
He does. Zergo dies to a bear if he tries to block it. And if your opponent's just killing you with a bear, and you're like, Zergo, aw, man. That's pretty awful. So that's Commander as well. You know, so he's pretty good when you're developing, okay sometimes at parity, amazing when you're winning, and pretty shit when you're losing. So, but still, I love Zergo as a card, and as these guys can attest, I have punched face with Zergo many times.
He is the face puncher. No one punches face like Zergo.
Zergo, the Minge Manager.
Helm Smasher?
Zergo says, pillage and burn kids.
Yes, pillage and burn kids. Yeah. Really should have put commas in that.
Alright.
So, yeah, that's Quadrant Theory. But I really wanted to hear from you guys to see what your thoughts are on the idea that there's a theory for determining whether a card is good or not.
I like it.
It's a crock of shit.
As someone who has chronic inability to determine the relevance of a card to a deck, my problem is I build decks and I go, okay. And I just kind of sort of, I build decks very haphazardly.
Yeah.
And just having a small device just to have me go,
yeah,
wait a second, maybe this isn't so good.
Yeah,
I like that. Even just to slow you down enough to just think, perhaps this is not the best idea. So,
yeah.
I quite like it. Although you have to evaluate the card slightly differently in Commander,
mm-hmm.
To Limited, which is what this is
very much a tool for Limited more than anything else.
But it's still good.
Yeah. Even just to have a tool to be like, okay, this is an amazing card. Oh, hang on a minute. What if I was losing? Would I want to top deck this card?
Yeah.
Yes, no. That might actually change my opinion on the card, whether I'm going to put it in my deck, right?
It's much better than my card strategy, which is build a deck, playtest it seven or eight times, figure out which cards I'm never happy to draw, and then get rid of them. Because
mm-hmm.
although that might be an okay way to do it, it's also very time consuming.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I suppose that's better than my way of building limited decks.
Can I just say, I've had Realmright in my Master and Wanderer deck since it was back in the day a Niv-Mizzet the Firemind deck. Every incarnation. And I looked at it the other day and I went, you know what?
You're never happy to draw
I'm never happy to draw Realmright.
Every single time I've seen you play that card, you're like, Realmright.
I always draw it early. And it's the same with Prismatic Omen as well. I've got enough ways to get lands out. I don't need to make them tap for any color either, so fuck them off. But it took like 3 years to figure it out. Yes.
Sounds like you need Walking Atlas.
I mean, I've genuinely seen you slump in your chair when you Maelstrom Wandered and you cascaded into a Realmright. And you're like, son of a bitch, this is so mediocre. You know, oh great, all of my basic lands, all of my lands are now also forests. Cool.
Yeah.
Sick. I have a 1-1. Super easy to kill. You know, like it's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think having some kind of card evaluation tool is a good idea, especially if you're not that good at building decks.
Right. I mean, this is kind of a teaching tool, and it is designed for you to sort of look at it critically. And if you disagree with it, that's also fine too. Like if you're able to look at this tool and you're like, I don't think this is detailed enough. I don't think this goes into as many scenarios as you might find. You know, it doesn't take into account synergy. It doesn't take into account play style. It doesn't take into account what the format's like. You know, any of that kind of stuff. You know, so like, I mean, in Khan's block, right? In Khan's limited, morphs were everywhere. So like 2/2s for 3 were the norm. So a 2/2 for 2 actually got a bit better because it came down a turn before morphs. And was already the same size as morphs. So that became a much better card for developing. And, 6 and 7 drops, whilst normally pretty good when you're trying to break parity, actually became pretty awful because you'd much rather put a morph card in your deck that can flip up for 7 mana and become something cool, rather than something that just natively costs 7 mana, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If I can have a card that I can either cast on turn 7 or cost on turn 3, then flip up on turn 6. I'd much rather play the second one. So it was it was an interesting one, and that's always something that happens like that. Gatecrash was a limited format which was super aggressive. You needed to play tutus. So when you were talking about things like parody, you weren't talking about big board states. You were talking about it's turn three and he's got a couple of tutus here. He's probably going to attack me for like 16. This is parody. Like, it sort of flipped the idea of that kind of stuff, and you couldn't play basically anything that cost 4 or 5 mana unless you were really trying to push a particular kind of deck. It was very odd. And you always, of course, have to take into account like the mechanics in a set, you know. Something in Battle for Zendikar that exiles your opponent's thing might actually be technically classified as something that's good for developing because it sets up your processors later on in the game. You know, yeah. Something like a Grave Birthing, which exiles a card from the graveyard and you get a Scion and you get to draw a card. It's a pretty good developing card because it's like, get a dude, which is sort of mana, and set up something for processing, and I also get to draw a card. Sick.
And instant speed. So you can win at the end of your opponent's turn.
And it's also devoid. What's not to love about Grave Birthing? Oh my god, I love Grave Birthing.
Wait, is Grave Birthing devoid?
Yeah, it is.
Huh, cool.
I have a foil one, actually.
I have a Spanish one.
Ooh.
Is it a Spanish foil?
No.
Oh.
None of my Spanish packs had foils. It was annoying.
You bought a whole bunch of Spanish packs?
No, my sister came back from Spain. She got me 2 packs.
Oh, yeah. Oh, isn't that nice?
I have a Dispel, and I have the Red-Black Dual Land.
Oh, cool.
Those are like the only...
Fuck cool things, awesome, yeah.
Cool. Smoldering Marsh in Spanish would be sick.
Yeah. Plus, I gave Joe my Montaña, basically.
Nice. Did you get a Spanish horribly awry in there, by any chance?
I don't believe so, no.
I don't know. I've raved about the art more than enough. Now, the other thing is, funny that you talk about morphs. Have any of you guys seen Treasure Planet?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's been a while. Yeah.
The movie, yeah.
Yeah. Now, I want to see morph tokens with morph from Treasure Planet. Is that not... Why has nobody done that yet?
I honestly can't remember the movie well enough to remember who the fuck Morph is.
It was just like a little flying... metamorphous blob that could change his shape into anything.
Nah, that sounds like Morph.
So like Giru from Dragon Ball GT?
Sort of more like Ditto from Pokemon.
Ah.
Except tiny and flying.
Okay. Oh, that sounds adorable.
It's really cute, yeah. It's like a dog.
Yeah.
Anyway. Except tiny and flying.
Just like a dog.
Just like the cats in your hands.
Yeah, fucking Treasure Planet. That was basically, it was exactly Treasure Island, but in space, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
A sequel to Black Sails.
And with aliens and shit.
So, yeah, Treasure Island.
Yeah, so, alright, so, Calum and Chris, like what do you guys think about Quadrant Theory?
I like it in Limited, because I sort of do it already without thinking about it.
Yeah.
But anything other than that, it's just...
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it's common sense, right? It's sort of like looking at a card and being like, well, if I was losing, you know, do I want this card? Mm. Is this a good card that starts developing the board state? You know, like that kind of thing. That's often why, because Limited is all about the board state. It's all about creatures, and you're generally not able to play things like Planeswalkers and cool enchantments and that kind of stuff that do a lot of things. Or they at least have multiple copies of them, so you have to rely on creatures. So something like a Counterspell tends to be not that great in Limited, because it doesn't actually affect the board state in any way. It just counters one of your opponent's things, which in Limited is probably kind of mediocre. You're like, I paid 3 mana to counter your 2/2. I feel somewhat, you know, upset about this. I'm gonna go home and cry about it. Like, I waste some mana. Oh no.
I had my Desolation Twin countered by Robbie last night, the night before last.
But you still got the 10/10?
No.
Yeah, it's a cast trigger.
It's a cast trigger.
Then I should have won!
Oh, Steven.
Oh, Robbie's rule sharking you.
No, it was 2 o'clock in the bloody morning. We were both knackered, but still.
Yeah, all of the big Eldrazi, actually, I think all of the colorless Eldrazi have a cast trigger.
Aren't all the Eldrazi colorless?
The ones that are colorless mana.
Rapacious one is red.
Isn't he devoid?
No,
he's from original.
That's an Eldrazi.
An Eldrazi.
Yeah. It annoys me now that like they've finally figured out that they could just make Eldrazi like colorless as like a ability thing. So then now we have the old common and uncommon Eldrazi and stuff like that, like, you know, Kozilek Predator, that are just colored creatures and they don't play well with the new ones. It's kind of annoying.
I have I've updated Chaos MTG as well, and one big segment of the Chaos like program is basically giving a creature a keyword or giving the next creature you cast that keyword.
Okay.
I put Devoid in there now, and compared to things like Flying, Double Strike, First Strike, Lifelink, it's like, yay, my next creature spell becomes colorless.
Yay.
Yes.
It might be relevant. It might be.
All is dust. Yes, I'm glad it was devoid.
Yeah.
I get to keep my robe right. Yes!
About time.
My lands are still out.
But yeah.
Yeah, but I don't like this theory.
No?
No.
It doesn't surprise me.
I've said it many, many times. I am too stubborn to take this theory into account. My battle for Zendikar pre-release was looking at a single copy of Molten Nursery and saying, this is the deck. And then I looked through, found all the Devoid spells and said, all right, that's 23. Let's do this. I didn't even look at the cards. I just like, Devoid? Yes. Yep.
How did you actually go?
I went 1-1-1.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I won one, I went to time, and then I lost.
Still better than me, who actually made my deck sort of half decently.
Yeah. Feels pretty bad, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
And the only reason that I lost the first game is that I got stuck on 2 lands both games.
Oh, that's lame.
And I was playing 17 land, so it's not like I was playing a small amount of land.
Yeah. I'm really excited for the next pre-release.
I'll go to Oath of the Gatewatch.
Done, done.
Yep. I have no idea what's going to be in the set. No one knows. No one does, really.
Three man lands?
Yeah. 3 man lands and more expeditions, basically. Yeah.
I want to be a pre-release. It's going to be good. Midnight pre-release. Smash it out. 3. Yeah. Go 3-0. Yeah. 4-0. Go 6-0. If you're fast enough.
Stay the whole time.
6-0. Defeat your opponent so fast that we have to run extra rounds just so you can play people. Steven, you're not doing anything. Fucking play someone. Fine. You play that
all
guy.
Right. I don't want any more boosters. I can't carry them.
I can't hold all these boosters. Here, just have a damn box.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, so I really quite liked learning about quadrant theory when I was first getting into like playing limited as like a thing. Back when I used to go to Good Games Cannington. And I play limited a lot less these days. Mostly more of a constructed guy, and I've definitely been bitten by the commander bug these past couple of weeks. Been really sort of itching to play commander. I tell you, like the Friday when I went to FNM, you guys weren't there for whatever reason. I had been playing commander just immediately before that. And as soon as I sat down to play Standard, I was like, oh, this isn't Commander. I was like, my deck is cool and all, and I really like it, but I felt disappointed. I was like, oh, I really like my Commander deck. I just want to play Commander against people.
That was the main reason why I didn't show up that Friday night, was because I'm severely burnt out on Modern and Friday night Magic.
Well, you should start showing up on Thursday nights now, because Good Games Gene Lips running a Commander League.
Oh, yeah. Sick!
Fucking keen, son!
So
I would have been there this Thursday, but that was the day I moved into
Krakow. Yeah. Nekazar.
Yeah, so we
crack out Norrin.
We,
some bitches.
Norrin El Diffidant or whatever it is.
Norrin El Diffidant.
You guys might have somewhat of a problem with that, though, because It has a point system, right? So
50-minute rounds.
It's like I think we might be changing that.
It's like achievements in game, right?
Kind of. Yeah. Basically, so we ran a tester a night the other night. We had 8 people showed up. It was pretty good. We ran 50-minute rounds to try and finish a 4-player game, which was honestly too short. I think we're probably going to move it up to an hour. I think.
Yeah, because that'll definitely make a difference.
Honestly, I think it might, because people know that they were under a time limit, so it was changing things a little bit. But there are.
You know, me and Kevin just gonna put in all the junk.
Cards. Yeah, it really, I guess it really depends on who we're playing with.
Let's resolve Warp World 4 times.
Yeah. But there are plus and negative points in the game. Basically, you get positive points for killing someone, or how you place at the end of the game, which if you go to time is based on life totals. You get positive points for like hitting somebody with their own commander, or basically just like doing awesome stuff. You do get negative points though for messing with somebody's mana base, which is destroying more than 2 lands of theirs. You get negative points for resetting the game state irreparably. You get negative points
you get
negative points for killing somebody before turn 5.
Oh, I'm okay with that then.
Before their turn 5.
Okay, maybe not Nekazar then.
Well, maybe Nekazar, but you just like hold off on it a little bit.
Right, it's turn 5 now.
Yeah, you go, alright, turn 5, yeah, cool, kill everybody. Wrath, and wheel, yeah. But yeah, so it was honestly a lot of fun. I came dead last. Basically, like, at the end of the night, we tallied up all the points, and most people generally got about 15, 16 points. I think the person who won got 19 points. I think it was Joe.
A Geo? Female Geo?
And I got
Cotton Eye Joe.
I got four. I got 4 points, which you get 1 point for coming last. And I'm pretty sure I received an additional point because in my second to last game I came second last. But basically my entire night was come out of the gate swinging with Zergo Helm Smasher, kick everybody's ass straight off the bat, immediately anger the rest of the table and get ganged up and killed.
Aww.
And I didn't learn my lesson because like my deck is basically designed to only do that. Like there is no like other game plan. It's like, well, Zergo has to attack and I've got all these equipments on him, I guess I'll punch and I'll punch and I'll punch. And I was making the mistake of not killing people. Like I could have attacked someone twice.
Oh, yeah.
But instead I attacked this person, then I attacked this person. So now then they both gang up on me. And then they killed me.
You idiot.
Right.
You got too used to playing me and Cal and Steven.
Pretty much, yeah. I got, you
assume that people weren't trying to win.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then fucking Sushi, his commander is Marik Rebere, who can tap to gain control of target creature. He just stole my Zergo and was just punching me with it. And I'm like, my deck is now completely redundant. It's not that my deck is super focused on Zergo, but he's like a major key player to the deck. And I'm like, I have all these equipments that I'm putting on, you know, like a Grave Titan and whatever. That's cool. But I'm still getting punched by my own commander that I can't deal with. Oh my god, is this what it feels like to be on the other side of a Zergo?
See, this is why you need to put in... You need to put back in those dozen Wraths you took out.
Right.
Homeward
Bath. It doesn't do anything against the Zergo, though.
Grand! It has cycling!
Just an emergency Homeward Path. That's right, you can do without the Evolving Wilds.
No, Wraths work if it's your turn.
Yeah, but I'm fairly certain he had a way to give it indestructible as well.
Indigdirtibles.
Yeah. Indigdirtibles and Deedles.
Vicky Diggies and Indigdirtibles.
But yeah, you guys should totally come along to those. Unfortunately, I will only be able to go to the next two. And then past that, I probably won't be able to come to them at all. If not, or Wednesdays. And the recording day for this show is probably going to change too. Because I have a job now. A real full-time...
Job.
Real actual...
Wait, on Sundays?
Yeah. My week is Sunday to Thursday.
I've done that.
So
it's pretty shit.
I guess Saturday will have to be the recording day then.
So my weekend... So I got a job at Indisclosed Company. Real full-time actual super real boy adult job.
He's a male prostitute.
Yes, I'm a
There's
male
no
prostitute.
Need to beat around the
place. Yeah. I'm a Chippendale dancer. I'm ashamed.
I don't know if you guys are familiar with GTA 5, but essentially, like, in the style of the Life Invader officers, he's going to be playing Hacky Sack all day. It's going to be great.
Yeah. So I'm going to be working Sunday to Thursdays now, like 11:30 till 8. So that's going to affect my week pretty majorly, because Friday, Saturday is now my weekend.
Wait, 11:30 to 8?
Yeah.
8.5 hours.
Man, eight
so
and
shorter
hours.
Than a normal work day.
Yeah, it means I get to start late, yeah, I get to have a nice cruisy morning, and then I come home in the evening, which means I dodge both bits of traffic.
You are going to hit yourself in the face when it comes to parking, though. Parking there is a fucking nightmare. Please take public transport.
There is a parking garage.
Oh, you disclosed the company. Don't disclose the company.
There is a parking garage for Indeterminate Company.
Yes, the one.
Yeah.
Oh, nice, but I didn't know that.
Actually, I think because of the contract that I signed last night, or no, 2 nights ago, I'm fairly certain I actually have to disclose that I'm from Indisclosed Company. Yeah, because they want me to be... whenever I'm on social media, they want me to be open about what my role in internet is.
That's interesting, because let me tell you what. My contract for, you know, working at Undisclosed Hospital basically says, stay the fuck off social media.
Yeah.
Don't talk about the place you work at, otherwise we will kill your family and your children and their pets.
Yeah, but
and
that's because Fiona Stanley's a piece of shit.
It's not that hospital. Let's not talk about it.
Ah, so it's not that one. Let's narrow it down to the ones in Perth. No. We'll do it that way. I'll have taken it out of the episode.
Oh, no, that's right.
Yeah. for my ones, I mean. Because I need to check my contract. So I start tomorrow.
Oh, you haven't started yet at the time of recording.
I have officially. So as of the time you're listening to this episode, I've been working there for a week. Hey, that's good.
Oh, when I get back from Dongra, you'll have settled in and you'll have money, and I'll have money, and we can go to game nights.
Oh,
yay!
God, I'm gonna have it.
You're gonna have money, buddy.
I'm gonna have actual, genuine, real money.
Yeah.
Not this Monopoly shit I've been operating off for a couple of years.
I have to survive off $350 for 4 weeks, and that includes a 400-kilometer trip.
I get currently right now. I get 400 a fortnight, which is
right now.
Which is right now, yeah,
that's not great.
Yeah, it's not great. So, but hey, I'm now going to be on
400 fortnight. No,
it's 200 a week.
It's like eight.
Yeah.
That's
it's like nine.
I'll pay $100 a week for my fuel.
Yeah.
Whack, mate.
I do $60 every 2 weeks, so.
I do about $20 every 2 weeks. I don't drive very much.
I walk to work.
Like, I've listened to a lot of magic podcasts in the last week, but I've started listening to Welcome to Night Vale, which, shout out! And I've also started listening again to the Kingdom of Loathing podcast, which is for, like, a really fun, really stupid web game from years back that's still going. And they've got a good podcast. I can't stop. I need more podcasts. Please, more listening material.
You should listen to Sanspans Radio.
Sanspans Radio?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, look.
They do movie maintenance.
Shut up a second. No. And Jamie has all of their merchandise. Huh. Every single one.
Yeah, she met them as well, didn't
multiple
she?
Multiple mugs.
Yeah, she has their show.
She has the... That's their other show. Shut up a second. But she has another shirt of theirs, which is Joel Up a Joel, and it's just a picture of Joel Dusha 4 times.
Okay. Wait, so aren't there 2 Joels?
Yeah.
Zema and Dusha?
Yeah, but it's a picture of Zol Dusha 4 times.
Oh, okay.
Because it's Joel Up a Joel.
But is it like in the sort of pop-up, like
yeah,
Andy Warhol pop-up?
It's that picture. He's the one just top left of Shut Up a Second. So like, where there's the black space, he's the guy in the green shirt.
So for those of you out there who are listening to this podcast, sorry?
Find a Shut Up a Second poster and then locate the one in the green shirt.
And then just shut up a second so we can tell you.
Although anyway. For more Australian podcasts, listen to the Free to a Good Home podcast, which is done by 2 comedians in Sydney. They go through Gumtree and they talk about shit.
That sounds great.
In episode 1, there was someone who was trying to get rid of a horse because it was being bullied by another horse. And then the ad directly after that was someone trying to get rid of 2 dozen goats because they had no idea goats could climb.
I'm probably going to start listening to that.
Okay. I think someone was just selling for free. Pick up from some address in Sydney, box of bees. And one of the hosts was just flipping his shit because he can't exist in a world where there's a box of bees.
Like, is it a cardboard box? Is it taped? Yeah. Are there air holes?
So it's called what? Free to a Good Home.
Free to a Good Home.
All right, I'm gonna write this down.
I will probably track this down and maybe I'll put it in the show notes.
There you go.
For those of you who are from Australia, it stars Ben Jenkins from The Checkout on ABC. So that should give you some idea of who's in it.
That unfortunately does not.
Check out, it's a consumer affairs program. It's pretty good.
What the fuck?
I haven't watched TV in like close to a decade.
Anyway.
Yes, I believe this was a magic
This was a magic podcast at some point.
All right, let's bring it all the way back.
Mm-hmm.
Matt talked about his commander in regards to Quadrant Theory. What about my commander in regards to Quadrant Theory? Motherfucking wary.
Bring it back to me.
All right, so when you're developing...
Bad.
No, when you're developing, Norrin is amazing.
No.
Because he is a 2-power creature you can get down on turn 1.
That doesn't stay there.
He doesn't have to stay there.
That immediately leaves whenever somebody plays a spell or attacks.
Intimidation factor.
It doesn't have intimidate.
Intimidation.
Mm.
He has intimidate for your opponent. It's like, holy shit, that guy has 2 power?
When you're at parity, does nothing. Is not there.
No. When you're at parity and no one's doing anything, he is there.
Negligent
That's
dead.
That's one of the time he is there.
Negligent dead. Never shows up to ball games.
Alright, when you're winning, you can't attack with him.
Yeah, when you're winning, you can't attack with him. Cannot help you actually finish out a game. Unless you combine it with other stuff like Purfros.
Yeah.
When you're losing.
Can't block.
Can't block. Worst possible top deck.
Top deck and Norrin and be like,
shit.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about this one.
So yeah, 5 stars.
Yeah. It's no, great card.
Second to none.
Yeah. Alright, well, I think that brings to close a pretty good talk about Quadrant Theory. This is something I've been wanting to talk about for a while. You know, there's a variety of these, big, you know, overreaching, theories that limited resources mostly have come up with, that I wanted to talk about in terms of like casual play. You know, things like the vanilla test and, setup cost and all these kind of terms that...
Wait, vanilla test? So yeah. It's basically, you look at a card, does it have an effect? No, it's a vanilla.
As in, if this had no text, right? Mm. Like, how good is it in comparison to its mana cost? And then, like, how much does its text make it better, sort of thing, you know?
So if something like Phage had no text, it wouldn't be very good, because it wouldn't have Death Touch.
It's a 6-5 for 7, which I probably wouldn't play. But it's like, hey, oh, this is already a 2-2 for 2, I'm already going to play this anyway. Oh, great, it has other effects? Cool. Passes the vanilla test with flank.
Black Lotus wouldn't pass the vanilla test.
Vanilla test only really applies to creatures.
A 0-drop artifact that does nothing. It's not even a Darksteel relic.
What I would like to know is, what would my favourite card do against the Quadrant Theory
of Yogglehops?
Yogglehops!
Because I'm pretty sure it's shit in everything.
Yogglehops is basically shit in everything, except for losing.
Because even losing, because it's destroy everything, even your own lands.
Yeah, but it's essentially a reset button that gives you some breathing room, letting you try and, you know, set up your board state again and hopefully in a winning position.
Basically,
next time.
When you're trying to set up the board, not great.
What?
Because, no. Because it just resets the board.
Exactly.
Yeah. If you're trying to set stuff up, it gets rid of everything.
Remember, this is undeveloping. Yes. Alright.
Right? If I'm trying to build a building, right, and I'm putting up all the construction, like all the scaffolding and stuff like that, and someone comes in with a bulldozer and knocks it all down, I'm not like, great job.
No, you're looking at this all wrong.
Matt's like, what have you done? Callum pulls up the earmuffs and goes, what? Sorry!
But in Callum's defense, the scaffolding is already there.
And then he's knocked it down.
It's exactly like
this. Yes, but the scaffolding's there.
You and your opponent are making a house, or a catapult, because it's a combo. And you've just realized that your opponent has a little bit better materials than you, or they're a little bit closer to finishing off. You can be like, fuck you, we're starting again. Maybe I can do better this time, maybe I won't.
Yeah, but that's when you're behind.
It's not that when you're behind, it's when you're still developing.
I think that's basically at parity. Basically, like, because developing is like, I'm putting down stuff, you're putting down stuff. When you get to parity is, we've put down all of our stuff, your stuff is better than my stuff. Reset button.
See, I consider that still developing, because...
But if
you're doing the opposite of developing.
You have developed.
No. ED. I haven't finished developing. Okay. If on turn 7, you have exhausted your entire hand.
Exhausted.
On my turn 7, before I put down my 7th land, I tap 6, play Yogglehops, put down a mountain, play Norn the Wary. I'm now ahead. All because of Yogglehops.
Except you're not, because you can't attack with it.
Just too power.
In my head, I cannot get this out of my head now, is Callum knocking down all of the construction, leaning out of the bulldozer with a giant microphone and just shouting, Yogglehops! I did good, right?
I came in like a Yogglehops!
Callum, just on a wrecking ball, all the way through it all.
Do you want a bullhorn? Would you find you a bullhorn?
Just shouting your cops at people's faces.
Your cool horn!
Let Robbie have it. Sure.
Fine. Alright, so when you're ahead, your cops is amazing. Because you've now destroyed all your opponent's lands.
And now you're not ahead.
That's not a problem.
The point of being... A point of a card being good when you're winning is...
To stay winning?
Or to win.
Yeah. Fuck.
I mean, basically, in the quadrant theory, in Callum's version of it, there's three quadrants, right? Because there isn't a winning segment.
Exactly.
It's just not an important evaluation tool. It's like developing, which is apparently every point in the game.
Yep.
Parody.
Well, you're always drawing more cards.
Parody, which basically doesn't exist, so there's actually just two quadrants.
No.
It's either we're developing or I'm losing.
No, Callum's quadrant theory is as such. When I'm developing, what card will best get me to parity? And if I'm winning and losing, what card will get me best to parity?
Yeah. Right.
My perfect scenario is for the game to end with neither player having any permanence. Or any fun, really.
Have you considered running Barren Glory in a deck and just going for it?
I have not, though.
At least Barren Glory requires you to have some precision in your massive board wipes. Callum's just like, nah, everything gone.
Now, I know that the Cheese Stands Alone is a silver-bordered card, but is there anything stopping you from running it as a copy of Barren Glory in a mono-white deck, as long as it's...
I think as long as your playgroup is fine, yeah.
Because, I mean, you know, even if you just have a little square of, you know, sticky note over the top that says, this is actually a Barren Glory.
BT Dubs is Barren Glory.
I mean, you should be right?
Yeah.
So yeah, Chris, two thumbs up for Yogglehops. He's good at every point in the game.
Two thumbs up, but one of them's partially blown off.
Do I need to proffer a card as well, or...?
If you will. I think we're basically done, though.
Yeah, okay, we're done.
Alright, so, final thoughts, guys. on Quadrant Theory and on shit in general. Chris, when you start us off.
Yoggle Hops!
Yoggle Hops! Yoggle Hops is as good a card as I would like it to be. It begins arguments and end arguments. And shit in the middle, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, fair call, fair call. Always good having you on the show to yell Yoggle Hops from a giant loudspeaker. Stephen, final thoughts?
I like my cards. Wormcoil Engine will always be good at every quadrant ever, and I love it so much.
Yeah, Wormcoil Engine is actually phenomenal in every quadrant, yeah.
I also like Master Wanderer. I feel like the overwhelming majority of cards in my Master Wanderer deck are at least two quadrants okay.
Yeah, which is basically what you want. I think if a card is only good in one quadrant, you might want to reevaluate whether that's a card you want in your deck or not. Doesn't mean no, but it's like, is this only good when I'm developing and then at no other point in the game? Like a ramp spell? Ramp spells are generally pretty shit when you're at parity, because they do nothing.
What about when you're losing?
When you're losing, you're like, great, more land. This is exactly what I needed. Top deck of Cultivate. Awesome.
You could disguise a Harrow as a combat trick, though. Your opponent's getting ready to attack, and you're like, fingering your mana over there going, hang on, bring it. Alright, I'll attack with my 7-7. Ha! I get lands! I lose.
Wait, does Harrow only do basic lands?
You sack a land and get two basic lands, yeah.
See, I was thinking it was maybe like a crop rotation. No. Where you crop rotate into a Maze of Ith and it's like, fuck you.
you get a Maze of Ith and a Mystifying Maze and then just...
Yeah.
Yeah. Or a Maze of Ith and a Core Haven. I think that's the one that like prevents all damage, right?
Mystifying Maze is 4 and tap exile.
No, Core Haven. Core Haven's the white one. It's a legendary land that I think it can prevent all damage that a source would deal.
That sounds pretty cool. Hardcore.
That sounds great. Yeah. That's so Haven.
Core Haven. Legendary land, taps that and make it colorless, or for 1 and a white, prevent all combat damage that would be dealt by target attacking creature this turn.
That sounds great.
It's what? Basically a Maze of Ith that you have to pay for. Except like it doesn't even untap it or remove it from combat, so it's just like, ha.
I like it. And my other final thought is, I think I've bitten off way more than I can chew with the April Fool's episode this year, and that's all I'm going to say about it.
Oh, wow.
I've already started
You're fucking, it. It's like November, so you're what, like 6 months out?
Yep, and I've looked at the project I've got planned. If I succeed, I will never be able to top it ever.
Well, here's the thing.
That's right? A good plan.
Here's the thing. This year, you don't have to do it in secret. You can actually, like, talk to us about it, and we can help you.
Yeah, but I kind of want it to be secret. Like, I want to rock up on the day with a USB and go, Matt.
Plug this in, upload it now. Don't listen to it.
Here is the April Fool's episode. Just like that. Good
just
luck.
Do the pick sigh on your face.
I honestly think gonna be bad, but I'm gonna try it. I might have a draft of it available by I think February.
Jesus.
Maybe March.
Okay. All right, Callum, final thoughts.
Final thoughts. I don't care what Quadrant Theory says. I will continue to play Norrin the Wary because he's great. But for my actual final thought, I will leave you with a card that I honestly believe ticks all the boxes in this Quadrant Theory.
Okay.
Oh shit.
Fuck, I've forgotten the name of it. Wall of Omens.
Wall of Omens.
0-4 okay. Draws you a card. What more do you want?
And so yeah, 0-4 Defender. Yeah, it's good when you're developing because it helps you set up a nice defense. It draws you an extra card when you're at parity, so it gives you more top deck potential.
And it gives you a good blocker.
Gives you a good blocker, so it keeps continuing the parity, I guess.
Yep.
I mean, if you're winning, it's not a dead draw.
Exactly, yeah, because it replaces it.
It draws into something else. And when you're losing, it can probably block something big and draw you into something else. Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
Ticks all the boxes.
And I don't need to attack with it ever, because it has Defender.
What do we call a creature that's also, like, a cantrip? Like a creetrip? A cancher?
Cancher, yeah.
Cancher, yeah. Alright. Done! Yay! Yeah.
I think it's just a good creature. Elvish Visionary. Good card.
Not a 0-4.
1-1. Better than a 0-4. 1-1. Can kill creatures. Callum is repeatedly slamming his hands together.
He is a symbol monkey.
Alright, well, final thoughts, me.
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 Final thoughts, me.
Final thoughts, me.
Matt can do words.
I'm excited to start my new job at an undisclosed company.
The trumpets are us.
Oh no, I've given the secret away.
We also do mute.
Anyway, I'm really excited to start my new job, and it's gonna probably mean, I'm not entirely sure exactly what it means for Squirecast, to be honest, because it is gonna change up our main recording day.
Libido.
And it is going to change up how much free time I have. But honestly, at the point that I have Squirecast now, I can basically crank out editing pretty quickly. So hopefully this doesn't affect the quality of the show, guys. Or, you know, how often you get shows. Maybe we move to like a fortnightly thing or something like that, if that's how that works out. But we'll see.
No.
Squirecast must live on.
Yeah.
In the hearts and minds of all that follow it.
The hearts
and
minds. I mean, all else fails, we can just have like a spin-off podcast. We can call it...
A cast of squires.
Kyerswast.
Kyerswast.
Kyerswastica.
They would just have
no,
Squirecast.
No, bad idea. Bad idea, take it back.
Squirecast, right? But with all the letters in the word Matt removed from all the text in the show notes and have to try and piece it together like that.
So all the M's, A's, and T's and T's taken out?
Yep.
Oh wait, the T's and the T's?
The T's have been taken out twice, Kellen. There's like where the T would have been, there's not just a blank space, there's like a, like, it's like cut out of the page.
It'll be Squire...
Double removed.
Squirex. Yeah, we'll do a new show called Squirex. Just be me, Kellen, and Chris.
Wait, that was the fourth person.
Also Chris.
You, me, Callum, and Chris.
Yeah.
In the same way that the T's have been double removed, Chris has been double added into the show. Alright, well, as always, you can contact us at mtgsquirecast@gmail.com or email to Ferry at heschattinatimebubble@gmail.com. I even pimped that on the last show and talked about it to Chewy and Mike. That was pretty good. And you can like us on Facebook at Squirecast, follow us on Twitter at Squirecast, and of course you can catch us each and every Friday, at the very least for the upcoming future, I guess.
On
mtgcast.com and commandercast.com. And of course, linked in the show notes, of course, will be a link to the Commandercast Patreon. It sort of, kind of, maybe supports us indirectly, but realistically it helps our hosting site, and it helps William, who's been on the show a couple times, do his thing, you know, as hopefully a full-time job. So yeah, give that a look, and you know, you can get some cool stuff by supporting that Patreon. Get some nice I think you get some like exclusive episodes every week or something like that. Cool.
Regardless of what you donate, you will get one thing guaranteed, and that's
a signed Daggertal the Adamant.
Well, I was gonna say like a warm fuzzy feeling in your genitals and heart, because you've just supported, you know,
my genitals and heart, yes.
Yeah. What? Rubber bands are expensive. I need that shit, man. But no, we'll be supporting William because he's a good guy. And you should love him and feed him and never leave him.
Yeah. So William's offering a couple of things, for patrons. Basically, it's basically just if as a community you support the Patreon and he gets a certain amount, then everybody gets particular things. So if he can make $500 a month, he's going to start doing a new weekly series, revisiting old commanders and stuff like that. If we can get to $1,000 a month, they're going to be able to actually start selling playmats and sleeves and stuff, like actual official merchandise, which would be pretty sick.
Yeah,
with a logo on it.
As well as, and playmats for our loyal listeners with commissioned art, not just our logos. Okay, fair enough.
When we say owl, we mean Commander Cast Network.
And, if he can make $2,000 a month, which would be amazing if he could do that, this is something that I really wish he could apply to us, but I feel like it doesn't. Send a member of the network to every major Magic event. So at the very least, for every PAX, GP, or whatever, there would be someone from the Commander Cast Network there.
So if they ever host one in Perth.
Well, there's a PAX Australia in Melbourne. We would be the closest people.
But that's in Melbourne.
And there's a GP in Melbourne in March.
What happened to the other, like, Australian Magic the Gathering podcast? Did they just die or something, or?
No,
are we the best?
We just don't follow what they do.
Are we the best?
We don't follow what they do, so they may as well not exist.
Yeah, we are the best, clearly. But yeah, so from all of us here at Squirecast, I have been Matt.
I am, as always, Callum.
I have been Chris.
Yes.
And that's been Squirecast for the week, guys.
Yeah.
And he hasn't been Stephen.
But so. I have been Stephen.
And we'll catch you on the next episode of Squirecast.
And I'm Bean Stephen.
Fuck you, Stephen. I still haven't hit stop yet.
Every week. Da 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 da
you go into like a tuba and you go, you know, just change up a little bit.
I like that. It's quite convincing.
And the trumpet is like, I don't know.
I think I might need you for the April Fool's episode. Shit. I've got three memos here on my phone, and the first one's the one I just wrote. The second one is just a list of cards, and it says Hedonist, Trove, Bajuka Bog, and Leyline of the Void. No context. And then the last one is flatbread, steak, cheese, no sauce, no olives, no chilies, or gherkins. What?
Is that like a Subway order?
I think so, but I didn't buy anyone Subway. I'm gonna delete this. My phone is a repository of strange things. I have my computer as well. I'm like, okay, you know what? Spring clean my computer. Not my room, just my computer. Go through my files and I found a fucking role-playing game that I was making. I made three screens of this game and then apparently decided, you know what, fuck it, this is too time consuming.
That sounds like many of you and Robbie's pursuits.
Yeah,
let's invent a role-playing game system.
Lift.
Which is perfectly mirroring real life in all of its variables, including a complex chemistry system.
We got nowhere with it!
And you called me in as like, hey, can you give us, like, what are your thoughts on what we've done so far? And I was like, alright.
You people are fucking lunatics.
I was like, you have too much shit. Like, boil it down. What do you want to do with this? And you're like, we want to replicate real life. And I'm like, too big. Go smaller.
It's so funny, because every now and again, Robbie and I are hanging out, we're like, man, we should work on the lift system again. That's such a good idea. We'll open it up. Argue about the names of the skills for 2 hours, and then go, fuck it, I've had enough, we're done.
It's the worst possible kind of design session, where you're like, you haven't figured out necessarily what your actual goal is, really, or how you get there, or the mechanics of how to get there. But it's just so like stupid. The names of the mechanics.
If you're going to go about like a Fallout system, you have your special attributes, and then your skill levels are determined from your attributes.
Yeah, and a couple of perks and stuff.
Yeah. But now what we've done is we've gone, okay, look, we're going to roll your skills first, and then your attributes are determined from that, but actually there's a halfway system in between, where you actually sort of half determine it, but, and it's fucking, it's, like, we wrote out this really complex equation to determine your essentially your special stats. It's like this, the program takes 5 seconds to calculate it on a fucking core 2.
Wow, okay.
It's written in Python, it shouldn't take that long. Fuck.